Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to UFO Think Tank with your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Welcome, everyone, to UFO Think Tank. We have a special show going on today. Every show is special, actually. But our guest tonight will be Jeff Peckman. Jeff Peckman is the guy who started up the Denver Ballot Initiative to have an extraterrestrial commission, and he'll talk about that. Essentially, you know, that Denver, just like every city, has UFOs flying over it. In fact, you know, we'll ask him how much this comes into play later on in the show, but it has people who claim to be abducted and being taken by creatures. So what impact do UFOs have on Denver? And should Denver start to, like every city, like the whole nation, should start to prepare themselves for these visitations? So we'll talk to Jeff about that. Of course, it was really exciting last summer when Jeff launched this because he was able to get national, worldwide press on it. As you all know, we've talked about Stan Romanek a lot. He showed the press to Stan Romanek one of the videos that Stan has and put out that snapshot from the video of a possible extraterrestrial looking in Stan's window. That got Jeff on Larry King, also on David Letterman. If you haven't seen that clip on David Letterman, it's great. In fact, I'll put that up on my blog talk on the bottom there for a while. I should have done that prior to the show, but I'll do that so you can check that out. But you can also go to his website and check that out as well. So this is going to be a great show. Really excited to talk about it because I know he's got a lot of great things to say. He's a great speaker. He had some interesting experiences when he did this worldwide interview tour. And also, he has some interesting perspective on what he's been doing since then, too. He's also done a lot of talks recently at some UFO conferences, so we'll talk about those experiences. So this is going to be a great show. He's a really nice guy, really witty guy. I love to talk to him. So this is going to be great. But before that, as usual, let's talk some UFO news. In fact, I want to start off with an email I just now received. That's one thing I forgot to mention about Jeff. He's a Denver UFO examiner. So if you go to examiner.com, especially if you're in the Denver area, you're going to see his stuff. He's one of the most popular examiners at examiner.com too. Much more popular than me, and I've been reminding you guys I'm the Denver Paranormal Science Examiner, although I haven't been doing too bad on that either. My last story got a lot of press, and it's a lot of fun. Roger Marsh, as we usually talk about, is the National UFO Examiner, posts a lot of stuff from the MUFON files, and he just sent me an email that I will post. And remember, you can see all of these on the front page of UFOthinktank.com down towards the bottom in the news. It's part of my Yahoo News group where I send out information, pretty much similar information I send out on the MUFON .com stuff, but I send out a little bit more local, and I send out some of the stuff that I'm doing and a lot of stuff on what Jeff's doing lately. But he just sent out a story about a New Jersey gentleman who believes he got some pictures of aliens. I'm looking at these pictures, and I don't know that I see much here, but that happens often with me when I'm looking at these kind of pictures. So I don't know. I'll put this up there, and you guys will be able to take a look at for yourselves and see what you see. But this is the guy who put this up on MUFON.com. However, there have been a lot of other very interesting things that have been posted by Roger. In fact, just recently in the latest story is in Mississippi, a UFO caught on video as helicopters fly around. And it is a very interesting video. I'll have to warn you, you know, it is some teenagers, and so they're kind of cussing a lot because they're really surprised at what they're looking at. But there are these solid lights that are pretty much staying stationary, and there are a lot of helicopters. So I don't know if this was some sort of special helicopter maneuver that was going on, but there are a lot of helicopters in the area. I think in one shot you can see six or seven. It is night, so it is just their blinking lights that you're seeing flying around, and they are flying around this formation of lights. So pretty interesting video. I can't wait to hear what our local researchers have to say about that, because no doubt they're looking into it. In fact, since I just got this email too, I'll be making some phone calls to MUFON headquarters to see what's going on and if they're looking at this, and really interesting stuff. So Roger does a great job posting information, so be sure to take a look at that. Also, earlier this week he reported some other stuff. Some California pilot who says he saw a triangular UFO that emitted a blue flash of light. Also, the Journal of Frontier Science, which is cultivating UFO research, and that's sort of what I wrote my story about. I wrote my story recently on the Denver Paranormal Science Examiner about the extraterrestrial hypothesis, and a lot about how science is looking into this, how science should look into this, and how we shouldn't shy away from the extraterrestrial hypothesis and all of this. Some people say, if you keep talking about ETs with UFOs, scientists aren't going to look into UFOs. But luckily, scientists are looking into UFOs, and I don't think we can really get away from that stigma anyway. So there's cool stories there. Let's see what else we got in the last week. Some UFOs over Colorado and the Vail Valley, so a lot of people know about Vail. It's famous for skiing, and there have been UFOs that have been seen, and in fact, one of the local papers wrote about UFOs seen over Vail. In fact, I've talked a lot about Jason Cordova, my cousin who does the Metro State Crypto Science Society, put that together. He lived in the Roaring Fork Valley out there near Vail, and he actually saw UFOs out there too. He had some very interesting experiences, so we'll bring him on to talk about that sometime. Also in the Dallas covered, some of the MUFON groups that are having meetings out there, and it was pretty cool because here again, they weren't making fun of the subject or that people were looking into it, just the opposite. They wrote that UFO awareness group really isn't so far out because they interviewed them and found them, of course, to be interesting enough. I think a lot of people find this interesting. When you go to a MUFON meeting, you're mostly looking at older gentlemen, older retired gentlemen who are mostly professionals, many engineers, some police officers. You know, a lot of people have this idea of these real kooky, weird people that are probably younger, but it's very serious people who are looking into this stuff. So they found that interesting and wrote a great story on that. So there's some of what was going on in the news for UFOs, and let's go ahead and move on, and let us bring on Jeff Peckman. Yay.
Am I connected, Alejandro?
You are here.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks. You might have heard, you know, Jeff, we decided he wanted to listen into the news, so I called him earlier, so he is already connected, and that's he's been listening to the news with us. What do you think of that news?
I always like your news. You've got access to a lot of stories that really are kind of hot off the press, or not even to the press yet. Roger Marsh does a great job posting stuff, and some of the other UFO examiners who are coming from the side of MUFON are, you know, it's wonderful to see that because it's just fresh information. It's posted daily. So it's great just to check into all the UFO examiners. And I appreciate the welcome that you gave me. You're one of my heroes in this whole thing because you really you have a very balanced approach to this whole field, and you're very much appreciated.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Ditto. Yeah, and, you know, I got to thank you, too, for it was really I hadn't thought of that about doing the examiner.com because, in fact, they had approached me early on a couple of years ago and asked, you know, they wanted MUFON to get involved with this, so I started searching for people to do it because I was too busy, and I do a lot of UFO stuff, but when you emailed and said, hey, you know, inviting other people to get involved with it, I thought it would be really fun to write about other paranormal stuff, just not UFOs, and have an outlet for my interest in other areas. So it was your email that got me to do that, and I'm having a lot of fun with it.
I'm glad to hear that. I have a lot of fun, too. It's, you know, it's unedited news and unedited commentaries, which is very rare in certainly in the mainstream media. Nobody has is controlling us, you know, within the guidelines of just decency.
we
can just speak what we believe to be true, and it's become a great source for people. And as you know, typically these examiner articles rank number one, two, three. They pretty much fill up a lot of the first page of any Google News search on the topic of UFOs or extraterrestrials or exopolitics and related areas. So collectively, I think we're having an impact.
Yeah, I think that's really neat. And yours is very popular. I mean, whenever you post a story, even when you don't post a story, because I'm always looking to see how I'm ranked, you're always up there on the top. So you have a lot of people looking at your stories. That's really great.
Yes, it's been that way. You know, I started December 11th last year. And when the new year came, I thought, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm just going to have the first, the number one ranked column.
Uh-huh.
And it turned out that way from January 1st until this day. It has been in that category of tech, gadgets and tech, the different categories that examiner.com has. It's been number one since January 1st. And, of course, it fluctuates from day to day and week to week. But I know that a lot of that comes from the fact that, you know, my name sort of got out there associated with the Ballot Initiative and Stan Romanek's video, and it was, you know, mistakenly called the Jeff Peckman video quite a lot.
Yeah.
But I think that's, you know, part of it. But, you know, and it may be some luck and the ability just to draw on the resources that have been created over so many years by the real champions, you know, those older gentlemen and women that you mentioned before who have been on this for a long time, and they're just an inexhaustible source of great information, and it's nice just to, you know, be able to put some of that together for this new audience.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, mentioning that, and since you've talked about that, what seems to, it feels like a really heavy load on my shoulders and others. There doesn't seem to be a lot of people in my generation or even younger getting involved with this field, and a lot of the people who are the big researchers in this arena are older, and I get worried because some of them are starting to get sick, and they're getting to that age where, you know, we're not going to have them around, unfortunately, forever, and I get worried because a lot of those people are leaving, and it's a pretty heavy burden to bear to try to carry the flame.
Yeah, I understand that, and my strategy for dealing with that really came out of previous experiences with ballot initiatives, and I think this is probably the single most important benefit from this Denver ballot initiative to create an extraterrestrial affairs commission, and that is that when you do a ballot initiative, especially something that's unusual or controversial, then students, entire classrooms, will take on the task of debating that issue. It legitimizes the discussion. In this case, it will legitimize the discussion of UFOs and extraterrestrial visitors and civilizations in the classrooms. Because, you know, a teacher can't just come into a classroom these days and say, okay, class, today we're going to talk about people from other planets. Just, you know, they won't have their job more than probably a few hours. And but when it's a ballot initiative, then it becomes something that they can study in, you know, any class, whether it's political science, social science, history. You know, can you imagine the teacher coming in and say, all right, now there's this ballot initiative that's in Denver, and it's not just Denver students, it's all over the country and probably in other places in the world. They're going to say, voters in Denver are going to decide on this. What would you decide? What questions do you have about this topic? What do you believe? Why do you believe it? What questions should be asked about this issue of visitations by extraterrestrial beings? And it really opens up a wide range of related topics and enables the students to think. And they go deeply into the issue, partly because it's their homework, it's their classwork. And so they'll look on the internet, and they're going to see your articles. They'll see my articles. They'll see, you know, the articles of the UFO examiners and on all these other internet news sources. They'll see the books, the DVDs. They'll be thinking about movies that they've seen that seem to be, you know, acclimating people to this reality. And when they go deeply into it like that, they really become very expert. They could give lectures after that experience. And you think about who's in those classes, you're going to find people that I think many within the, you know, paranormal arena or New Age, whatever, would say that a lot of those classrooms are going to have star seeds or indigo children or some of these children that are just totally amazing. Maybe they're just really, really, you know, bright, ambitious. They have a different worldview because their knowledge base has been accelerating so fast for the age that they're at, whereas things kind of happen a little slower when we were in school. And so you have all these really remarkable young people thinking not just outside the box, but outside the planet, outside the galaxy, and really contemplating this in a very real way and making their arguments for or against this ballot initiative. And to me, that's more important than the outcome of the election. Because just to engage in that way, those students are probably going to be the first ones, if there is extraterrestrial life out there, and you know this is all disclosed anytime soon, they will be the first generation to start living, they'll start out their adult life in a kind of post-disclosure and open contact environment. So I think that's the future, and I think that they'll be the ones to carry the torch from all these people that you know and yourself and me, you know. And I'm not really a UFO researcher. I just know how to do a ballot initiative. But I think that's important because on the internet, for example, after we had that press conference last year, I was just looking for different keywords that would reveal, you know, how many websites are paying attention. And I ended up using my own name to search because it was so closely associated with the ballot initiative and that video. And there were about I looked in language groups and found that in the top 24 language groups, there are over 300,000 websites.
Wow.
And that and almost half of those were in Spanish.
Interesting.
Yeah, and over 100,000 in English. And then the rest, I mean, there were 4,000 in Arabic, 3,000 in Chinese, traditional Chinese, another 2,500 in simplified Chinese, and then thousands in Romanian and Dutch and, you know, 1,500 in Persian. And these aren't just website hits. These are websites.
Right.
So I'm guessing, you know, even if you had 100 people looking at each website, well, that's already 30 million people. So just engaging people in that way is great.
Yeah, I want to get into some of those interviews and things like that. But I want to start back talking about, and I agree with you, I wanted to say that that's what really excites me about your ballot initiative, is that all of the news that it's going to create, all of the news it's already created, and really getting the word out there. And I also love, you know, that many people feel it's a facade, but I mean, we live in a democracy, you know, doing some grassroots and hitting the streets and working through the system to make things happen. I love that too. So I really get excited about this whole thing.
Yeah, and I'd like to comment right on that. Yesterday I was looking up things about campaign finance laws, and just to see what the restriction people supporting the campaign with even small donations. And I was looking at the Colorado Constitution, and one of the first things it says is the first power hereby reserved. The first power is hereby reserved by the people is the initiative. And then it goes on to talk about collecting signatures. Another point says, the veto power of the governor shall not extend to measures initiated by the people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have reserved for ourselves some very special rights. You know, the right to petition the government for redress of grievances, it kind of all, you know, starts out of that. But just different cities and towns have reserved those rights to, you know, for citizens to pass laws themselves. And interestingly enough, issue campaigns or issue committees, committees that are established for the purpose of promoting, trying to get people to vote for or against a ballot initiative, there is no limitation on the amount of money that people can donate to that. And people can even donate to an issue committee from foreign countries, even businesses and corporations and individuals. Because, you know, ultimately it's the people of Denver that are the ones that are voting, and they're acting as the lawmakers. So it's just interesting that issue committees are separated out, and they just are not subject to the same limitations on contributions that candidates are.
Mm-hmm.
I find that fascinating as, you know, one of the rights that we've guaranteed ourselves, because of the power of the people, we the people who created this government. So yeah, I hope that this will translate into people taking responsibility in other ways, exerting the power that they have politically, spiritually,
mm-hmm.
and in any other way to just be more, be more informed, to be empowered to make better decisions for themselves and take responsibility for bigger issues than what they normally do.
Yeah, and I can see how that would happen, how people would be inspired to do this, and that is a great idea. Let's put out the website real quick, and we'll do this throughout the show so people can go look at the website while they're listening. What is the website that they can go to read about the campaign?
extracampaign.org, and that's normal spelling of extra, extra, campaign.org. And
all right,
try to
great.
Keep things up to date there. And people can see the Letterman interview there, too.
Right, which is great. It's so funny. And that's where they can get a hold of you to donate. And like you said, there are no limitations on how much you can donate. Because I know there's some people out there thinking, wow, I want to donate, but I hope they don't limit how much I donate because I want to donate so much money. Well, there are no limitations, so don't worry yourself. You can spend as much as you want.
Right. And if they donate $20 or more, then I need to report their name and address.
Oh, okay.
If they donate, I think, $100 or more, then I need their name, address, an employer. And that's all on the donations page of the website. Anyway.
Oh, interesting. Employer, that's really interesting.
Yeah, because, they want to know who's putting money behind something. Well, if you've got a ballot initiative that is going to increase gambling stakes at
right.
the casinos, well, you really want to know if it's just one big company on the East Coast that's bankrolling the whole thing, that's going to
mm-hmm.
profit by, tens of millions of dollars. But this, what we're doing here is, very, very small amounts of money involved, and we're just paying. I want to give a financial incentive to the petitioners because, many of these people are out of work. They have other things to do. They've got jobs or they just, the economy's bad. So I think it's important to set a precedent. And, just as people are in the government or in the military are being paid to not reveal the truth or even to just outright lie about this whole topic,
mm-hmm.
I think people should be, given some kind of financial incentive, some compensation to help them out when they're collecting signatures for the petition. So that's where the
right.
donations will go.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into, my latest story, which is an interesting controversy, as you well know, in the UFO and ufology is the whole extraterrestrial hypothesis. And so that's why I wanted to write up a big story on why it's valid, you know, why people look into it, why science should look into it. And so I wanted to talk to you about what, you know, like a lot of the talks you had gone to were about UFOs. What inspired you to make this about extraterrestrials as opposed to UFOs?
Well, I wanted to be sure that the arguments from people who might want to vote against it or from the city were not along the lines of, you know, we can't form a commission to investigate every flashing light in the sky because there are other people that do that. And it's just too much. The reason I wanted to focus on the extraterrestrial part was because there's also evidence of that. So it kind of takes them past this consideration of, well, there's just a lot of stuff that can be explained. You know, maybe, I don't know, 90, 95% of the UFO sightings can be explained as something else. But I wanted it to focus on the kind of evidence that Stan Romanek had, and even Billy Meyer in Switzerland, and all these other people throughout the years that actually had contact, because, you know, lights in the sky, that sort of thing, these unidentified things, you know, it doesn't really impact the people of Denver for so much in any significant way. Whereas if somebody's having an abduction experience or contact experience and they're quite, you know, concerned or freaked out about that, there's no place to go. One of the other examiner writers, young man, he called up five psychiatrists and he said, I think I've been abducted by, you know, extraterrestrial beings. And I really need to talk to somebody. And I think four of them just laughed at him.
Really?
Yes, yes. And he did it as an experiment just to see what the response was, and then he wrote an article about it. And so clearly, there really is not, this is not taken seriously enough. People don't realize that this is a legitimate thing that city government should know about because it does happen. And there could be issues of contamination, even unintentional contamination of interactions between human beings and extraterrestrial beings. There could be safety issues, which is why, you know, as you know, the in the fireman's training manual, there's a couple of paragraphs about dealing with UFOs, you know, craft from extraterrestrial sort origins. And, you know, because if it crashes or whatever, I mean, it's an issue to deal with. And so I think that it was important just to let people know that, you know, the government has known about these visitors for a long time. It's been covered up. And this is a real, very real kind of situation that, that everybody should at least be having in the back of their mind that it could happen. I mean, if children, you know, we get a lot of reports. You probably run into people, and I certainly do, that said, yes, I was taken when I was a child. Well, that's, you know, that would be considered kidnapping a child in normal kind of criminal justice system. But if people just don't believe that that happens at all, then, you know, of course, they can be very unkind to the child that might even suggest something like that.
Right.
Calling them, you know, that they're daydreaming, they're in some kind of fantasy world, you know, what have they been smoking? And so that's why I just wanted to, I thought, sort of a demand pull, you know, where you kind of reach beyond what seems to be the average understanding of these things, and then I think it pulls people along a little more than they would be otherwise.
Yeah, that's what really got me early on. I used to be skeptical of the abduction scenario, but I started meeting people who were claiming to be abducted, hearing their stories, some of these people and the trauma they had experienced, and they weren't into UFOs or anything. And then I saw UFOs with a few, including Stan, which was blew me away because I was a researcher for a few years before I had seen a UFO myself. And what really got me is what you mentioned there, is that they had no place to go. They were traumatized by their experiences, and they had no place to go to get to seek help. And what further, the even worse rub, is that it seemed that, and I believe this to be true, that the government was aware that this is happening, different people in the government and the military, but they don't provide, like, what should happen, which is provide for these people.
Right, and I think you've had Niara Eisley on your show just last week,
mm-hmm.
if I'm not mistaken. And her experience was, and a lot of other, the experience of a lot of other people, is that what they believe is some kind of abduction by extraterrestrial beings is actually by our own people, by our own military, when they might have had a non-threatening contact experience earlier on. Later on, it seems somewhat common that they have a very threatening and disturbing experience, but it's with, you know, U.S. military or people, or people that look like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets to be a big confusing area,
mm-hmm.
and it's important that people have a place to go. And that's one of the things that the Ballot Initiative will do, is just to set up a protocol for taking these reports seriously and directing the people to the proper public services or private services so that they do have a place to go, and to also try to help evaluate the risks and the benefits of these interactions between humans and extraterrestrial visitors.
Mm-hmm. And luckily, now that I found them, you know, there are a few networks out there, but there were a lot more therapists involved with this than I had expected, and there are some kind of in the closet still about it that are out there as well. So hopefully I want to ferret that out and show the public that there are certified, you know, licensed therapists who have come to the conclusion that there is something to this phenomena, such as John Mack and Dr. Leo Sprinkle, because of the work that they've done.
Right, and that's very important. And you have those kinds of connections that, at least unofficially, informally, you can kind of give people some direction if they ask you.
I wanted to ask you about, just starting from the basics now, you have the experience, the mechanics around doing a ballot initiative for anybody else who wants to be out there, because you had that experience coupled with some convincing talks you went to. You put that together and made this happen. If you could talk about that piece, you know, about how you first got inspired and then the mechanics about going about getting something like this rolling.
Right. I ran into, just had a chance meeting, if there is such a thing, with Rick Nelson, who's the founder and executive director of the Paranormal Research Forum here in Denver, which I understand is the largest monthly meeting of its kind in the country. And he invited me to listen to a couple of talks, and one of the first ones was by Stan Romanek. And I sort of had a sense that, you know, there was something going on in other parts of the universe. But after I saw Stan's evidence, there was enough there to convince me that it's a story that should be heard, and that not enough people were paying attention, and the media was not doing justice to that story. But that wasn't really happening. You know, the media wasn't paying attention. Then I heard John Schussler, a very distinguished member of MUFON, talk a couple months later about how he had, you know, had more direct experience with these, you know, crashes or evidence or collected evidence as a UFO investigator. And yet he said, I don't think that the government's going to release this information in my lifetime. And he had a stack of declassified documents that pretty much confirmed in my mind, yeah, in fact, the government cover-up part of this whole story is also real, and people should hear about that. But again, nobody was paying attention. So after he said that he didn't think the government would release this information, I just had this light go on inside me, and I thought, I know how, first of all, we are the government. You know, our public servants are not the government. We are the government. And James Madison even said that. He said, the people are the only legitimate fountain of power. And then it's from that all the other powers of government have derived. So within 20 minutes, by the time I got home from that lecture, I had decided, okay, I know how to do this. We'll do a ballot initiative. And I had a very general concept worked out. And then I did some research in the city ordinances and saw that there were already about 90 different boards and commissions that had been formed for various purposes, whether it's, you know, bicycles or senior citizens or gay rights or pets or whatever. And I thought, you know, that's the perfect way to introduce this, is to create some kind of a board or commission. So I used a model that I saw in the ordinances started with that, drafted some stuff, passed the information around to a couple people, got some feedback, and filed that draft April 29th of last year. Without telling the media or anybody else, I just thought, okay, it's time to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put my foot in the water and just quietly delivered this draft initiative, which is the first step to have a meeting with the city attorney and the city council staff director, just for an informal meeting. And the next day, the Rocky Mountain News reporter, Daniel Chacon, called me up because it became a public document, and he discovered that, and I guess that was his beat, to
mm-hmm.
find out what's going on at City Hall. He wrote an article that led to a couple of, TV stations calling me. Then within the first week, I'd done about 15 or 20 interviews, and that
wow.
was already all over the world by that point.
Mm-hmm.
Had that meeting within the required 10 days of submitting the draft, had that meeting, and I mentioned San Romanek's video, and that's what the press picked up then, and then that went all around the world. And they started asking me to be able to show it. So I asked Stan, and I'd only met Stan once before showing his video at this press conference, and he agreed to do it. So we had a small what we thought would be a small gathering, but the media itself built this up into this, ultimate proof of alien invasion kind
mm-hmm.
of story, or alien presence. And that was a huge, huge wave of. That was before the press conference, and of course afterwards it went all over the world, a lot. And that led to us, Stan and I, being on Larry King that evening, and then me being invited to New York to be on David Letterman and then Geraldo show. And Stan was invited as well. He was the preferred guest, but he doesn't like to travel commercial airlines because of a plane crash that some of his cycling buddies were on when they were headed to the Olympics or
right.
pre-qualification stuff. So anyway, so that's the way it started. And so normally the media does not pay attention to a ballot initiative until the signatures are turned in. And that's where we're starting right now. But that's what the ballot initiative does. You draft up an ordinance that you want passed or a statute or change in the charter. You collect signatures to put it on the ballot, a very specific number of signatures. And then if it's on the ballot, people vote to pass it or not to pass it. And that's really the basic process. But it's within that process that all this other stuff happens. Students study it, neighborhood groups discuss it, civic groups discuss it,
mm-hmm.
Newspapers will print it, put the pro and con arguments in the newspaper, and it really does become the talk of the town and the talk of the nation. But it only happens, well, normally that only happens when you turn in the signatures. I got some early publicity last year, but really, from this point forward, nothing new significant will come until we have the signatures. And so that's where the focus is, raising the money to pay petitioners, finding events to collect signatures. It's all about the signatures, getting them on the ballot.
Yeah. So the press conference, you described recently how that affected you, and that was pretty interesting. That was pretty funny. Just about how, what you were expecting of that press conference and your experience even going to the site for the press conference and what you thought.
Yeah, that was a funny experience. And other people commented on this as well. I had done a few radio and TV interviews locally before that press conference when they started asking me about the video, and I would describe it. And they'd say, well, that sounds pretty interesting. I'd like to see that. How can I see that? You got to let me see that. and they were very intense about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, okay, look, I'll see what I can do. So I figured, all right, we'd just do this in somebody's living room, We'll just have Stan come or show this this video of his alien in the window and invite the four or five local reporters that wanted to see it. Well, because it got so built up, we did it in a room down at the Auraria campus in Denver. And then we realized on pretty short notice we had to have an even bigger room. And as we were going there, showing up for the press conference. And by the way, the previous day, I'd done 12 hours of almost nonstop interviews. And then had got about 4 hours of sleep that night because I was up late trying to figure out all the interviews that I was being requested to do the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And I had overbooked myself. And, one TV station wanted me, NBC wanted me at five different times that day for different NBC shows. And I said, oh, I just, you know, I can't do them all. And they, I did three, I think. And they said that I had beat the record by Kobe Bryant for
wow.
being in the studio in the same day more than once, you know.
Wow. So, and it's incredible. You know, I know from, like, Stephenville how much when something big happens in this field, the media runs you, and all of a sudden you're thinking you've got to prioritize. Should I do Geraldo or should I do the CNN show or
yeah.
Or who should we do here? It's funny.
Yeah, it was funny. And of course, arriving at the campus, the college campus, to this event, you know, there were four different vans with their satellites, you know, live feed satellite digital
mm-hmm.
extended up. And, you know, we went there and, oh, my gosh, you know, what's happened here? Is another school shooting? Is the president here? It turned out to be our little press conference that was drawing that. And the press really did respond well. You
mm-hmm.
spoke there. Dr. Claude Swanson, the physicist, was talking about Stan's evidence. We showed some of the whistleblower testimony from the Disclosure Project that was done by Stephen Greer.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, everybody, all the media got a DVD, 2 hours of witness testimony from these whistleblowers. But interestingly, of course, they paid attention primarily to the still photo that was taken
mm-hmm.
from the video. And that was all over the world. And there were all these parodies of the video because the real video wasn't released. And so people just started making up other things.
Mm-hmm.
And they would call it the authentic Stan Romanek alien video, the authentic Jeff Beckman alien video. And of course, it was all, you know, bogus. I mean,
yeah.
You know, only the still photo had been released at that point. But, you know, it really did, Jen, I think people just really want to know. And
mm-hmm.
the reports from the media were not actually conclusive either
right.
way. They were saying, well, you know, it kind of looked like there was something there. I mean, I can't say for sure that it was an extraterrestrial being. I can't say for sure that it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see this kind of, their eyes were kind of glazed over like, what did I just see? You know?
Yeah.
And what, how am I going to describe this to the viewing audience? So that was very funny. And of course, right after the press conference, was another, you know, 6 hours of interviews, and then Stan and I, it
wow.
kind of ended with Stan and I on Larry King in a satellite uplink that evening.
Yeah. I know when I knew it was going to be big because luckily we're at a point where the news calls MUFON. Everybody calls MUFON. What do you think of this? What do you think of that when UFO stuff happens? So they called me, and I was like, you know, well, actually, I'm going to be part of the press conference. And so that was really interesting and kind of tough. In fact, I was on MSNBC that day, and they were arguing over studio space. So eventually we didn't even get any studio space, but they were good about it. You know, they weren't making fun and coming to conclusions prior to it. They were keeping open mind, which I thought was really cool. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so I mean, the media response was incredible.
Yeah, and actually there were interviews. I mean, by the time the dust settled a few days later, I was looking at my emails and discovered 30 other interview requests that I didn't even know about.
Wow.
That were all for, you know, Friday or Saturday.
Yeah.
And one of the producers it was either Good Morning America or one of those shows, actually showed up at my house and knocked on the door and said they wanted me to go the next morning to New York to do an exclusive interview with, I think it was Good Morning America or CBS Morning News or something like that. And I said, well, you know, I've already booked two or three other national TV interviews over the next few days, so I really can't do that. And they didn't want me to talk to anybody else.
Right.
For like 2 or 3 days, just to do their show. I said I didn't agree to do it.
Yeah.
So,
yep. They try to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and just to give some context with the Romanek thing, and I think that was what was rough. And you know, I felt certainly torn working on Stan's case for so long, and then releasing this bit of video, just because. It can be taken a bit out of context because There's so much to his case, and I want to hear your experience. For instance, you know, Stan, when he shows everybody the majority of what's going on, it takes 4 hours. It's a four-hour talk. It took me the first time, you know, I kind of got read into the case. I was at his house for a day and a half to get caught up on everything that was going on. But for instance, for you, what was your experience like the first time you went and saw his talk with all of that evidence?
Well, you're right about that it was just a piece of it. And I reminded the people during every interview, including on David Letterman, I said that that video was just a tiny sliver of his experiences. Yeah. And I saw that at the end of his long presentation when I was already convinced that extraterrestrial beings existed and had visited him. And so when he showed the video, it was just sort of a final confirmation. It was a visual. It was a visual to accompany my belief that, yeah, he's telling the truth. This is really going on at his house. And then when you see it, it's like, okay, I mean, that certainly clenches it. But even if I hadn't seen the video, in fact, come to think of it, I'm not sure that he actually showed the video the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
I think he might have showed just a couple of still photos. And then I saw the video the second time that I saw his presentation about 9 months later. So I was already convinced. And there's so many sides of his evidence, from the mathematical formulas to the physical evidence, the stuff that he had in his hand, to the, you know, circles in his yard where he was found, and they were radioactive and, you know, had EMF differences between being in this circle and outside of the circle on his lawn. And there are just so many different ways to look at it, any one of which is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. But all of them together really just make a very convincing case. And in a court of law, of course, his testimony, the testimony of the witnesses to all those events, that would be admitted in court. His videotape evidence, his photographs, mm-hmm. all that physical evidence, that would all be admitted in court. So, you know, in the court of public opinion, you really have to take all that into account. And, yeah, if this was a jury trial, it would be an easy decision. So, yeah, it's for real. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and for the listeners, you can go get Stan's book. It's not very big. It's only like $18 on Amazon. It just got released. It's selling very well. And you can get his book to kind of get a snapshot of what's going on. There's more in the book than you've probably ever heard on this case, even on my show, because there's just so much to his case. And there are some pieces that, you know, they hold close to their chest just because of the science around it and trying to present it in the proper manner, which I think is wise, and it gets frustrating for people because they want to know the info. But you can get his book. Also, ABC 2020 has done some shooting. They're going to do some more. It is going to be on 2020 where they're going to show some of this stuff, and I believe they're going to show the entire video. That's the intent. So you will get to see some of this stuff. And I wanted to ask your experience because it fascinates me. I've been so close to this thing. I've had my experiences with Stan. And, you know, when he talks, we'll have hundreds of people from the local area, and they're all stunned. They're all amazed when they leave. I had one gentleman who's a friend of mine, a MUFON investigator, used to be a rocket an engineer on rocket scientist, essentially. He came out of that thing, and he's like, that changed my life. I no longer can think about this stuff as like I used to, you know. He is more like a lot of MUFON investigators, real nuts and bolts. You've probably had experiences with some of the people you've brought there who have shared their feelings on seeing the talks too, huh?
Yes, and, you know, it's there. I think just about everybody in the audience has probably had a little more experience. I've never even seen what I thought was a UFO, a craft from somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
or something I couldn't identify. Certainly have not had any close contact with these extraterrestrial beings. And I think in a way that works in my favor, because I can be completely neutral as someone who's trying to create an environment where these things can be discussed without, you know, focusing too much on any particular experience that I've had. And so, I've been in those situations and just kind of noticed how people were responding, and especially when he shows the video and all of a sudden it just goes dead quiet, and then people just see it, and their eyes get real big, and their mouth just kind of drops open, and then they just go, oh, look at this.
Yeah.
Because at that point, they're really primed. They've seen all the evidence, and for them as well, it's more of a final confirmation, you know, just some visual to relate to. But it really is, transforming for people, at least in their understanding of what's going on in the universe, potentially, and about us as a human species, and the fact that we are not alone.
The reactions last night, Stan did a talk to open his book at one of the biggest bookstores, probably the biggest bookstore in Denver, downtown, old, beautiful bookstore, tattered cover, and he had one of the biggest crowds they've ever had there for a new author. The room was almost full, and over 100 people there, and mostly people who hadn't seen this stuff, and their reactions and the employees of the tattered cover's reactions were amazing to see, because I know they had to have been thinking, oh my gosh, some alien guy coming and talking here tonight.
Right. Yeah, it's true. I was standing at the door collecting a few signatures, and people were just walking out, just kind of shaking their head back and forth, like, I can't believe what I just saw. Okay. One of them actually walked back after she just went past me about 10 feet and rushed back and gave me her card, business card, offering to help out with the petitioning. And she was in a... she actually worked as a crime investigator for a police force.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, well, that fits. not the crime part of it, but just having investigative skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sort of help would be invaluable. So, yeah, getting back into your efforts and your experiences with the effort. So then you were on David Letterman. And you have some interesting stories related to that experience, too.
Yes. That was, in fact, that came up pretty quickly. I think the press conference was last May 30th, and then the Letterman show was the 10th. So it all fell together very quickly. And on the way there, I was just getting on the flight at Denver International Airport. And just like I was 5 feet from, walking onto the plane, and my phone rang, and I picked it up, and it was one of the major local radio stations that knew I was going and just wanted to kind of like a, it was their morning news program. And it was sort of like following the story moment to moment. I'm getting on the plane, and I said, well, call me back in a few minutes. So there I was sitting on the plane, waiting to taxi out, and they called back, and we did an interview. I mean, there was that much interest. And then, flew to New York, and within an hour or so of getting to the airport, maybe an hour and a half, I was sitting in the Letterman studio, getting makeup put on.
Real quick, and how were the people reacting on the plane around you to what you're saying in your interview?
Well, I think they didn't have any idea who I was talking to. It was just, if anything, they might have been annoyed just that I was there. But it was a crowded, very crowded flight.
Mm-hmm.
But I got there, and while I was waiting for my time to be on the stage, I was watching the TV and in the waiting room, and they did this little skit with how many aliens can you put in a Jamba Juice store, and it was funny. So I kind of loosened up from that, and then while I was waiting, the segment producer came in. And he came in a few times just to see how I was doing and all that. And actually, at one point, I was asleep on the couch because I was so exhausted. And he said, came in once. He said, I just got a call from somebody at the Army. I said, oh, really? He said, what'd they want? And he said, well, the guy didn't really want anything. He just said he was calling to check in. Well, I don't know. What does that mean? And I wasn't sure if they were going to try to suppress what I was going to say or what Dave Letterman was going to ask me. But, nothing came from it as far as I can tell. But the funniest part was, of course, going up to the back door of the studio where everybody comes and goes. I was just in the SUV. I'd been picked up, and I just sat in the front to chat with the driver, you know. And we got up there, and of course, there's all these handful of guys with cameras and ready to take us. Paparazzi, I guess, you know,
yeah.
Ready to take a picture of the next famous person that gets out of a limo or something. And I told the driver, I said, oh, I hate disappointing people, but it's the moment of truth here. So I get out, and sure enough, one or two of them kind of ran towards me to take a picture, and then they just kind of went, okay, never mind. They went back, and then there's a crowd of people, you know, the fans back there. So, but coming out, later on when I got home, back to Denver, I was just looking at stuff and on the internet, and something caught my attention that said, Jeff Peckman leaving the Letterman show. I thought, what could that be about? I mean, that's like something you'd say about David Letterman leaving the Letterman show, you know?
Uh-huh.
So I thought, this is nuts. I better see what this is all about. And it was on YouTube, and I, you know, clicked on it, and you see the back, that scene in the back where there's the crowd of people, there's the photographers, and there's the back door. The back door opens. Mm-hmm. I walk out across the sidewalk. I get in the SUV, and it takes off. And that was it.
How funny.
I thought, wow, is that crazy? I mean, there's somebody to think that, you know, obviously the story was getting enough attention that somebody thought that was worth putting up there.
Yeah, maybe even somebody paid for it. 25 bucks, just in case.
Yeah.
Throw it up,
see
what happens.
Really funny. So
yeah.
It popped up again recently on some website of New York celebrities or something. I thought, well, that's really crazy.
Yeah.
But I think it really is just, this is a story, the whole UFO extraterrestrial thing. It's been around for so long. It's been so suppressed that people are just really, really eager to find out what's going on. I mean, their desire has been built up, you know, for their whole life.
Right.
It's been, you know, kind of, you know, fueled by the different TV shows and the movies that there have been. And it's just this running in the background that people just really have a desire to know, and they just grab on to all of it, you know. And there's a lot of confusing stuff out there and a lot of nonsense, but that's what MUFON is so great about doing, is just getting really hard data so that there's this wall, this solid wall of convincing data that, you know, the debunkers, the skeptics, when they, you know, they may want to discredit somebody, but they just smash into that wall of data when it comes to MUFON. So what you do is just a really great service.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's an important piece. Of course, there's criticism, but everybody gets criticized of being too stringent on that. But it's a niche that's necessary. I wanted to ask you, so then with the ballot initiative, you didn't, you kind of suspended it actually last year. And so it went into a new stage.
That's right. By the time it really got rolling, legally you have 180 days from the time that the petition is approved to collect the signatures. But then in order to get on the ballot for last November, realistically we only had about 2 months. And the first 6 weeks of that 2 months was, I was just totally consumed by all these interviews. And so I thought I had to make an executive decision. I said, okay, now, do I do interviews or do I try to, you know, collect all these signatures? And I thought, well, the real purpose of doing this was to get the media and the public to pay attention to stories like that of Stan Romanek. So it really was an easy decision. And at the end of that first 6 weeks, I probably could have walked away from the whole thing and felt satisfied that, you know, the desire I had to get the message to the masses was, you know, for the most part, fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
But there did seem to be reasons to keep going on it. And so we missed the deadline to get on last November's ballot. And so I revised part of it, made some important changes that everybody agreed were very helpful. And we started the petitioning over again just a little bit. But then the city attorney, when I had to redo that meeting, he said, well, you might as well know that if you go on to the ballot for May of 2009, then you may be faced with a situation, or Denver might be, where there's nothing else on the ballot except for this ballot initiative. And it costs over $500,000 to hold an election. So I said, oh, well, that's not good. But I said, well, isn't it true that the city council can pass this initiative on their own and avoid that scenario? He said, well, yeah, that's true. So I said, okay, well, good enough. I'll give them 30 days.
Do it.
And so I did, and you know, I got a couple of really very silly responses from the city council members. And by that time, after that 30 days, it was getting pretty close to the election, and looked like Barack Obama was favored to win. And so I thought, well, let's just hang on here a little bit. I mean, I did, you know, we started collecting a few signatures, and I actually collected some on the, it was a celebration of John Lennon's birthday, and I talked to his ex-girlfriend, May Pang, about their UFO experience sighting in New York. You know, this craft was right outside their apartment, their rooftop apartment. So anyway, so we started just a little bit, but then at the election, and he had a lot of people around him that were very favorable to disclosing what the government knew about UFOs and anything beyond that, extraterrestrial beings. So I said, all right, well, let's just hang on a little bit. And then he won the election. And at that point, I said, okay, stop collecting signatures. Let's just see what happens for a few months here and give Obama a chance to, you know, see if anything comes from all the speculation that he might be the disclosure president. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a couple months into his presidency, I thought, all right, this isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And I figured, and then I had the simultaneous realization that it's better that way, but he doesn't, because I started thinking about this pretty deeply, and I thought, you know, to acknowledge the existence of extraterrestrial civilizations, that they've been visiting us, that these UFOs are from places outside of Earth, some of them, you know, that's a very important, very personal decision. It's not going to be something that people are going to suddenly adopt as their own belief simply because a president stands on a podium reading a scripted message from a teleprompter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just not going to happen. And so I thought, you know, it's so much better because this is so important that it's really just too important to leave in the hands of our elected public servants. And
yeah,
that's really what they are. They're not the masters of our destiny. So this is an occasion, one of the very important occasions, where we have to rise to use our own power and choose our own destiny. And person to person, you know, friend to friend, colleague to colleague, share this information in an atmosphere where people have a reason to pay attention.
Yeah.
And that's what a ballot initiative does better than anything else.
Yeah.
If people are going to vote on it, they suddenly rise to that responsibility of being a lawmaker instead of just delegating that responsibility to somewhere else. And it's like in a jury trial. You know, people might complain about being called to jury duty, but when they're there, they can be extremely discerning. They can pick up on stuff. They're, you know, somebody's life might be in their hands, and they really do take it seriously. And they value the fact that they even have the right to vote, and they look at the, you know, pros and cons of the issue, and ultimately they'll make a decision. But just engaging them in that way, that's why a ballot initiative like this becomes the talk of the town. And it'll be discussed everywhere, classrooms, you know, backyard barbecues, the sporting events. And it's, you know, because people don't, you know, they got to say, hey, you know, what's going on here? And people are going to find that their neighbors are going to have stories to tell of UFOs and contact. And I get this all the time. I mean, I was just mowing the lawn the other day, and somebody walked across the street and told me this incredible story of a couple of different stories of contact and very clear sightings of, you know, what looked like alien craft, you know. So that's, you know, that's what happens, and that's what's so exciting about this.
Yeah, and I love that premise because I agree that I could see how people got excited with Obama because John Podesta, who was openly asking for release of UFO information, Hillary and the Clintons, they actually tried to get information, and we know this from their good friend William Hubble, who wrote a book about how the Clintons were looking for into that information. There's a lot of other evidence as well where they were worked with Rockefeller, things like this, where the Clintons were interested in the arena. So and Bill Richardson, of course, being from New Mexico, and he's talked about UFOs quite often, and being in Roswell, and how he thinks that the government isn't releasing all the information on Roswell. So I could see that excitement, but at least with my experience by looking at it, what I knew and what I feel, and I agree with the researcher Grant Cameron, was that the Clintons tried as the president and the first lady, and they weren't able to get access to the information. And if Podesta, who was chief of staff for Clinton, is out in the public saying we need information, you know, he's obviously not as powerful as he was when he was chief of staff. So, you know, which confirms what a lot of us already suspected, is that even the president might not have the power to do that.
That's right, and that is a concern. And when you think about it, like the Billy Meyer case or even Stan Romanek's case, if you get a really good, solid case with a lot of really amazing evidence that could turn the tide in what people believe about this whole issue, it's naturally going to be subject to a lot of attacks, and all the people who don't want that kind of information to reach the masses, well, then they have one easy target, mm-hmm. or maybe two easy targets. So if you look at President Obama, if he became that pivotal point where this whole disclosure could unfold, well, again, you know, he's going to be subjected to probably more ridicule than anybody and more attacks by people who don't want this information out, or in some way discredited or, you know, threatened, even threatened by people saying, well, you know, if you're going to do this, you know, I'm not going to vote on your health care program.
Right.
And it gets very, very political. But with the people doing it, well, there simply are not enough men in black to show up at every barbecue and every sporting event mm-hmm. and every conversation that's taking place at a grassroots level, person to person, family member to family member, you know.
Right.
And so really, I think that's what the members of Congress recognized when Dr. Stephen Greer was approaching them to try to disclose this. He mentioned this in one of his talks in Denver. And by the way, he's coming back to Denver June 18th. Mm-hmm. So I'll have that on the extracampaign.org website and by tomorrow. And they said, you know, for this to really happen, I mean, we can't do this. You know, it's just not the way things work here. And I would add, if they work at all, mm-hmm. Congress. But they said, you know, this is, for this to actually happen, it pretty much has to happen at a grassroots level.
Mm-hmm.
And you think of, you know, so many of the other really important things that have happened in our country,
right,
were grassroots initiatives. Mm-hmm. Even the establishment of our country itself, you know, after so many,
right.
I've understood that there was a time when the colonists were pleading with King George to just, you know, get off our backs and let us be you know, independent and that sort of thing. At some point, you just have to say, all right, we're just, you know, taking the situation in our own hands. Deal with it.
Yeah.
And that's the way I feel about this disclosure.
Mm-hmm. And that was a premise behind me starting up, actually, the think tank, was we got to quit pestering the government. We've been doing that in the military for how long? We've got enough info. We're smart enough to do it ourselves as the public. And my biggest idols in life are people like Gandhi or Martin Luther King or the Dalai Lama, who did just that, inspired the masses to make change happen on their own.
Right. And historically, you know, the media always gives a lot of attention to any kind of anything that sounds like a David and Goliath story.
Mm-hmm.
They just love that because it really reveals the more beautiful and profound aspects of our humanity. And when that kind of movement comes from just, you know, one person or a couple of people, and it develops and it snowballs and it becomes a movement,
mm-hmm.
and you know, a transforming kind of movement, then, you know, the media is swept into that because the masses are their customers, their readers,
right,
their viewers. And so it's easy for them to start getting on that side of, you know, the common man, you know, taking on something that our elected public servants refuse even to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there, even at the X conference in April in Gaithersburg, Maryland, which is, you know, usually, I think that was the fifth one, and typically it's, you know, talks about how to get the government, you know, what can we do to force, you know, pressure the government. There's always this talk about pressuring the government. I don't think the government feels pressure from this.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it gets to be like...
If we had $2 trillion, maybe we could press.
Yeah, we're bankrolling all their campaigns. But, you know, it's like here we are, the masters of our destiny, the ultimate fountain of power in this country, banging on the servants' entrance of our own house to try to get a few scraps of, you know, commitment to this disclosure process. And every once in a while, a comment is made and we get really excited about it. But at any time we want, we can just walk around to the front door and regally walk into our own house and take control of the situation. That door is always open through things like this ballot initiative.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that's just such an empowering thing.
Yeah.
And when I was talking about that at the last two UFO Congress in Lawson, Nevada, and then the X Conference, people really found it to be very refreshing because they're getting frustrated. And year after year, they go to these things and they keep wondering, when is the government ever going to reveal this? And I say, we are the government.
Mm-hmm.
We have this information. The government, we don't even know how much the government still has, you know, what they haven't destroyed or given off to private corporations. I mean, what's left?
Yeah.
There might be, there's probably stuff there, but, you know, so what? Like you said, we have so much evidence on our own, and we have evidence that the government doesn't have.
Right.
It's very, very impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, these things are hard. It's not easy to take on the big guys and to make things happen, and you need a lot of people, and a lot of people like you and a lot of the hard workers have to make sacrifices to make things happen. But that's what excites me is, you know, I'm hopeful that you get those signatures, and I'm certainly going to try my best to help make that happen. But even if the signatures aren't gotten, this movement is still happening. There is momentum and we're moving, and it's going to happen, and it's exciting to be a part of that. I'm confident that it's going to happen, and this is possibly the next big movement in America, is to get this information out there.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I know that the world's going to be watching this, but they won't watch it. They won't pay too much attention, at least to this ballot initiative, until we collect our signatures. And as we've been speaking, I sent out an email message earlier today explaining to, you know, other a network, a forum that is used by people around the world in exopolitics and UFO research. I said, look, you know, this, even though this is just a Denver thing, it's going to impact this whole issue around the world because of all the people that have paid attention to it so far. And so I was inviting them to take responsibility for, you know, some percentage of signatures, either by if they had a way to collect the signatures or contributing money to the campaign so that we could provide that financial incentive. And just as we were speaking, about 5 minutes ago, an email came to me from a group in Asia committing $800.
You're kidding. Wow.
I'm not kidding. And that would take care of about 10% of the signatures that we need. And there's a few other people, that locally. Oh, this is really exciting. For anybody that is living around Denver, there's at least a dozen different musicians and music groups who have been very supportive of this ballot initiative, you know, providing moral support and signing a petition. And they've been thinking of ways to help out, holding special concerts where the people sort of know that this is for the purpose of getting signatures. And so that's going to probably be a major way that this happens. So stay alert to the announcements at extracampaign.org. And if anybody else wants to just take on responsibility for, you know, 5 signatures, 10 signatures, for every $2 that gets donated, that really counts for one valid signature of a Denver resident, a registered Denver voter. So, you know, if you want to take on 1% of the signatures, 10%, you know, 25%, any number like that, this is just going to be a way for everybody in the world, and I think it'll be important for the people in Denver to see that, yeah, this is important enough to the rest of the world that there are people donating money from other countries. And I think that's helpful for the media to know and for the local supporters and then ultimately the voters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is America. It's how things work. But the fact is that if you had enough money, you could essentially buy those signatures. And what I mean,
we don't talk about it that way.
Well, but it's the truth. Come on, it's America. But I mean, you would be able to hire people to hit the streets, and they would get those signatures. There's no doubt, because you would have, lots of people all over the place. So I mean, it's still, this is America, and it's how things are done. So
right.
To help influence some people out there to donate, because like you said, it will help everyone. I think across the world, it gets worldwide attention if we get these signatures.
Yeah, and that's exactly the point I made today. I said, look, how soon do you think, or how confident are you that the president's going to come out and do this disclosure? And how soon do you think it's going to happen? And I said, my guess is it's probably not going to happen anytime soon, if at all. I said, think about it this way. If you could get thousands and tens of thousands of students all over the world discussing this issue in depth, and neighborhood organizations and this tremendous media attention that's going to come when it gets on the ballot, would that be, I mean, that would be an incredible show, right?
Mm-hmm,
to have
right.
it be the talk of the town and the talk of the nation and even beyond. Mm-hmm. What would you pay to see that show? Would
yeah.
you pay the price of a movie ticket or a dinner? So for $10, that's 5 signatures. And when you think about it, it's not much because, in any organization, there are those people who would rather just go to lectures about disclosure than actually get involved in disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Or they just like being part of an exclusive group of people who have this special knowledge,
mm-hmm.
and if everybody has it, well, then it's not special anymore,
All right.
But the thing is, we're just beginning to tap the great resource of knowledge that's available once we acknowledge mm-hmm. that we're not alone in the universe.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be huge. So, yeah, so basically this email, I just said, disclosure, tickets for sale.
Yeah, right.
$10 each.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully people will respond to that. But, there's some momentum, and there's people that, individuals who have taken on, have committed to taking on 10% of the signatures. And they'll just gather their own resources. They'll go out, they'll collect them, they'll get their friends together. And I think it's, the momentum is already picking up. And with this this email today, it looks like we've got about at least 40% of the signatures covered in that sense.
Great.
People committing to that much. And we're just like in our second week out of a 90-day period. And as you know, what our hope is that we can finish this all up in order to submit the signatures
mm-hmm.
right about August 6th or 7th, because that August 6th is when MUFON's international conference starts in Denver. They already have a press conference scheduled on the 7th. Whether we do something jointly or just near about that time, the 7th of August is the deadline for us to turn in the signatures to get on this November's ballot.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be very focused, and I'm committed 100% for that 3-month period because I know what was going to come out of this is going to be huge,
mm-hmm.
and that excites me.
Yeah,
I want to watch the show too.
Yeah,
I think other people have it.
I know some people. And I think we've talked about it, but I know some people who can get you those signatures at a discount. And I don't mean people with Italian names and brass knuckles. I just know people who will volunteer but for gas money or for lunch. So, yeah, hopefully we can get that going. I am really excited about that. And for any Denver listeners, people who live in Denver County, we'll be at the People's Fair. June 6th, we'll have a table. It'll have a MUFON banner out front, and we're actually, it's through an organization Jeff and I work with called the International Association of New Sciences. They're actually sponsoring the booth. So we'll have a booth where you can go get signatures. And, of course, they can visit your website at extracampaign.org.
Right. And we'll list a lot of other events where people can sign signatures and ways that they can help. And if they have a group that they meet with regularly and they're looking for speakers on interesting
right.
topics, you know, I can come, other people can come and maybe collect some signatures there. And by the way, I do want to mention that Stan Romanek was the very first to, in this round of this petitioning, to donate 5 of his new books to the campaign. And so those will either be sold or perhaps given to the real champions of the people, among the people collecting the signatures, just as a gift to reward them for their dedication.
Mm-hmm.
And the first large contribution, to cash contribution, came from a man named Larry Bryant out in Virginia, who has been with MUFON for a long time, and he's a columnist with UFO Magazine. And that magazine is going to have its 150th issue, special
mm-hmm.
issue, coming out very soon. And he's on the front cover. And it's a picture that I took of
yeah,
him at the X conference. It's actually very very sweet and very funny at the same time. And so he is absolutely committed to this, and he's been a very generous contributor even since last year, even though he's just on a very modest fixed income. He really sees the potential in this doing something and kind of fulfilling a lot of the desires he's had for getting this message to the masses. So I appreciate all those people, you know, large, small donations, anybody that's contributing, I think is going to help write a new chapter, a very important chapter in the history of this whole UFO story.
Yeah, you know, and talking about a show and what a great show it'll be. When we get the signatures, right?
Right.
UFO Hunters, speaking of UFO Magazine, because Bill Burns, one of the hosts from UFO Hunters, owns UFO Magazine, and that's who he's involved with all of this. But they're going to cancel the show, I guess. This will be the last season for it, which is unfortunate. But I know, because I get to work with different documentaries, there are things in the works. But, yeah, so if you want a show, you know, get this thing, help us get this thing rolling, and then hopefully that'll also inspire some media organization out there to get another TV show rolling.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen for sure because, you know, if you want to make a breakthrough and rise up with a higher wave of achievement, you have to draw from a broader base, and that's
mm-hmm.
exactly what this is going to result in. When all these people are voting on the issue and it's being watched around the world, people will just want to pay attention. They want to dig into it more than they ever had a reason to before.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, and then, you know, in the last few minutes, I did want to talk about, so you did get invited to speak at a bunch of UFO conferences. You were invited around. How was that experience?
My very first one was UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada in February, and that was wonderful. Got to meet a lot of the champions of this. Wendell Stevens, just listening to some great stories of him being over visiting Billy Meyer. Other people who had a lot of contact, you know, a lot of close encounters, just so many. Robert Dean, people had been in the military, in the government, on the inside. All these insiders and whistleblowers. That was great. The X conference in April in the D.C. area was fantastic. Again, it was a different orientation, and Steve Bassett is just a real champion of just continuing to lean on the door of government. I think it's important that that happens. I don't want anything that I've said about, you know, going to our federal government level. That still is important just to maintain a presence there. And
mm-hmm.
when the door opens, then, you know, people like Steve Bassett and Stephen Greer are there to mm-hmm. go in and you know, share what they know and to put our public servants in touch with the right people. So that's great. The next one I'll be speaking at will be the conference in Mount Shasta, which will be June 12th to the 14th. And, you can go to Shalimar productions.com, and that's also on my Extra Campaign website to find out about that. And that'll have more of a spiritual orientation in a just very well-known spiritual setting, and that'll be great. And then coming up, you know, there's that MUFON conference in August. I'm not speaking there, but then there's another conference where also I'm not scheduled to speak, but that's in September in Denver, and the details are going to be worked out, and I'll have something on that on the Extra Campaign website at all as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, hopefully, speaking of Men in Black, I guess my dog watching out for us. You get him, Tessa. But speaking of MUFON, I don't know if hopefully I won't get in trouble for saying this, but you know, I get to run the press conference, and personally, of course, that gives me a lot of say for what goes on at the press conference, and I really would like, you know, for you to be part of that, and I am pushing for that, but we'll see, and if, you know, there are listeners out there who are part of MUFON or feel the same, you know, email the MUFON headquarters, and you're going to go to MUFON.com, and let them know that, because, you know, they're, of course, very scientific and careful. And they may feel that, you know, we're not being attached to some scientific evidence in this. And I know some people may feel that way. So, you know, hopefully, but it's also, I think, you know, this is what we do this for, to inspire people like you to initiate these sort of grassroots efforts to make things happen. You know, I that's a big part of why I feel MUFON's here, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, MUFON's going to play a very special role because the first purpose described in this ballot initiative for the commission, their first responsibility, is to gather the best available, mm-hmm. credible evidence and to share that with the public. And, you know, that's where MUFON is going to play a very important role so that we know it is credible and it is solid evidence.
Yeah, if anybody gets a chance to see John Schuchler talk, he does, like Jeff talked at the beginning of the show, he'll have a stack of Freedom of Information Act required or retrieved documents, you know, government documents, just undeniably just showing all of the history that the government's had with UFOs and some of the people in the government who have been interested in researching UFOs and even trying to communicate with extraterrestrials. It's one of his latest talks. So it's fascinating.
It's going to be a lot more. I just can't wait till the students get involved.
Yeah.
You know, because they just come up. They're so brilliant anyway. I mean, they amaze me, you know, how they can keep up with this, all this communication technology and all the social networking. I think they're just going to be a huge force in sharing information. It's just going to, you know, just totally blow away all the federal level government.
Yeah.
They're going to, whatever they've done to suppress it or control it or ignore it, that's just going to evaporate as soon as these mm-hmm. students get involved.
Yeah, yep, that's what happens often with students. So great, we are about out of time. In fact, you know, since I've got you plugged in with me, we're going to hear a little voice coming across the radio that the listeners aren't going to be able to hear that will warn us that we're almost out of time. But the extracampaign.org is where people can get more information, donate money, because that's how our government works, unfortunately. It'd be great if we didn't need the money, but it certainly can help us. Oh, there she was. But also, even just any support by sending emails or whatever people could do, and I'm sure they can contact you for some ideas on how to do that, right?
Right. On the donation page, I think, is my email address.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if not, it's Jeff at extracampaign.org. So it's www.extracampaign.org is the website, or Jeff at extracampaign.org.
All right, great. Well, thank you very much for being on the show. You know, we'll have to talk about the results later, and we'll just work real hard right now and get this done, huh?
Great. Yes, we will. And thank you very much for having me on your show, Alejandro.
All right. Thank you. Well, everybody in the chat, thanks for being here. A person named ColorFi in there, ColoFi, had a great idea, by the way, Jeff, getting on Facebook and creating a Facebook campaign on there. Facebook is just extraordinary. I've been on there for a while, and But we can talk more about that later. We'll definitely have someone coming up next weekend. It'll either be a CSETI person or someone who did some investigating as a journalist into another extraordinary possible communication experience. So thanks for being here. We'll talk to you all later.
Thank you. Bye.